Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
And here we go.
Dr. Evil, we have a problem.
This is gonna be cool.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
They look like a couple of dorks.
Perfect. We couldn't have planned this better.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
What's happening, hot stuff?
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
What? English, do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
And welcome, everyone, to the Sports Report for this week. I'm Packer Dave. Glad to be with you. We got a lot on tap for the program today. Steve Leventhal will come to us in our next segment. He goes to Hallis Hall in Chicago every week and covers the Bears. We'll have some audio from there. From the Sports Byline Network, Jeff Rich joins us to talk about the rest of the NFL. And John Poulter, our professor of sports, joins us from Toronto, talking about the Major League Baseball playoff scenarios that are coming up during the week and some on the new hockey season that's underway. But let's talk NFC North football here to start. The Packers go into Dallas to play the Cowboys. The Packers go in at 3-1. Dallas is at 2-2. Should be a good game. Packers beat the Cowboys in the playoffs last year, and it was a nail-biter. Green Bay had an early lead. Dallas came back, but Mason Crosby put the nail in the coffin of the Cowboys and their season for the Packers, and then Green Bay went on to lose to the Falcons in the NFC Championship game. The Bears have the Vikings in Chicago. The Bears 1-3 at this point. The Vikings 2-2. The Bears look pretty bad against Green Bay, and so the Chicago brass has decided to put in Mitch Trubisky, their number one draft choice, as quarterback to start this week's game against Minnesota. But the Packers are back in Dallas, and Aaron Rodgers was asked about playing in the stadium where he won his Super Bowl. Here's Aaron Rodgers.
But there's not many guys left on this team from the Super Bowl years. We were actually talking today in the huddle. Jordy and I brought up kind of a inside joke that we had from that year. We looked around and said, it's just you and me, buddy. So that's kind of how it goes in this league. You got to play at a high level and make new inside jokes every year. And hopefully finish it off with a championship at some point here before this thing runs out. But yeah, I mean, I have some great feelings about that stadium, obviously. From a career standpoint, that's the best day of your career. Other than getting drafted, winning the Super Bowl, standing on that stage, holding the Lombardi, it's nothing better than that.
New Packer tight end Martellus Bennett comments on the Cowboy defense, and in particular, Sean Lee.
You got the Falcons defense, you got the Seattle defense, you got the Bengals defense. All those teams are very well stacked on defense. So just another challenge. I've seen Sean Lee grow as a player. He's always been one of the best linebackers in the game for a long time. I really enjoy playing against him because he's super smart and it's a good battles out there, not only physically but mentally, trying to beat him and when he quarterbacks the defense and stuff like that. So overall, it's just go out there and play football.
So we got a lot coming up on the program. Stay with us. If you like football, this is the right place. Even some baseball and hockey discussion later in the program. Right here, I'm Packer Dave. You're listening to the Sports Report. Steve Leventhal coming up after the break.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program. program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote. Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-718-1731. 800-718-1731. 800-718-1731.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Hey, this is Tom Arnold. I was just talking to my buddy Charlie Sheen, and he tells me that Packer Dave has been with more fat chicks than I have. Thank you.
Hey, you say it like it's a bad thing. I am Packer Dave. This is the Sports Report. I was a double for Charlie Sheen about 20 years ago in a couple B movies. One was done in Phoenix, one in Big Bear, California. It was kind of fun and just kind of a funny thing that happened. So thank you, Tom Arnold. Now we bring in from SRN Broadcasting. He covers the Bears each week at Halas Hall. Steve Leventhal. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine, Dave. And just, folks, those movies, you can go find them in the cutout bin at Best Buy. You can probably get them for $2.99 or $3.99.
Hey, No Code of Conduct was on Netflix a while back. I don't know if it's still on there, but it was on Netflix. All right, so the Bears are going with Mitch Trubisky, their first-round draft choice, at quarterback in the fifth game of the season. Glennon had a tough outing against the Packers last Thursday night. And so they move on to their rookie. You're at Halas Hall. What's the thoughts over there regarding this move?
Well, I mean, apart from the fact that they wasted $18 million that probably could have been spent on another player, perhaps an offensive lineman or maybe somebody in the secondary.
You say the $18 million, you're talking about Glennon's contract. Why did they sign him and then draft Trubisky in the first round?
Well, I'm not sure they knew whether or not he was going to be there, and they probably planned to draft somebody, and then, you know how the draft goes. You never know what's going to happen when, but, you know, it's the old adage. You know, they lost three games with Glennon for $18 million. They probably could have lost three games with, McNown or even, with Sanchez for a heck of a lot less.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's the feeling at Halas Hall on this move?
Well, the feeling at Halas Hall is that, Trubisky represents a different dynamic. He's a lot more agile. He will roll out. You're going to see sprints, rollouts, quarterback draws, a lot more mobility in some ways. When John Fox was talking about his ability as a quarterback, he compared it more to the kind of improvisation that Aaron Rodgers brings to the table. So that's quite a good compliment.
Okay, well, what did you hear at Halas Hall this week, and what audio do you have for us today?
We had John Fox and then offensive coordinator Dow Loggins. So first of all, John Fox was asked about the offense that the Vikings and the challenges they're going to present.
Well, actually, statistically, after four games, they rank higher on offense than they do on defense. You know, they played two different quarterbacks, both a little bit different. They both spin it pretty good. They've got explosive players. I know they lost one to an ACL. A guy I know that we liked coming out and Cook. I think Diggs and Thielen are, top eight in receptions in the league, and especially explosive plays. So I think that's kind of where their ranking is, on an early sample size.
Then offensive coordinator Dow Loggins, his comments were basically about how Trubisky is going to make everybody around him have to play better, because they certainly have a responsibility to keep him from getting injured and to protect the number two pick in the whole draft.
Well, it's making sure, number one, that everyone around him is playing well. And the way you get good quarterback play is get the other 10 guys to do their jobs. And we have to eliminate those things first. And we lead the National Football League in plays behind the sticks. No quarterback can be successful that way. And there's some good things. We're really good in third down. We're really good in the red area. Mike Glennon's done a really good job in 2 minute. So those are obviously things, the situational stuff that we have to build on. But this is the first time we've had the same offensive line 2 weeks in a row, and making sure we're doing exactly what Mitch feels good with. I think he is comfortable with the plan. The good thing is we've been around Mitch, and he's had 8 games to sit and watch Mike and Mark prepare. And so we have a better feel for him than a lot of times when you bring guys in off the street, and Matt Barkley shows up and did a really good job last year. But just getting to know him and being around him and seeing what his strengths are and what he's comfortable with is going to help us a lot.
All right, now we bring in to talk the rest of the NFL from the Sports Byline USA radio network. You can catch him at sportsbyline.com on Sunday mornings, 8 to 10 Pacific time. That is 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time at sportsbyline.com. His name is Jeff Rich. Jeff, welcome to the show.
It's good to be here. I'm a little exhausted. I had to watch a lot of football on Sunday between the Cardinals and the 49ers, and we almost didn't get a winner or a loser in that game, or a touchdown for that matter.
Let's touch on that game. You're based in Arizona. By the way, you were at the Diamondbacks wild card victory. That must have been a lot of fun.
It was. You know, I try to keep even keel to preserve my radio voice, and if the raspiness is coming through, you could blame Archie Bradley, a relief pitcher who hit a 2-RBI triple to really put the game away for the Arizona Diamondbacks against the Rockies, and we'll see what happens against the Dodgers.
Raspy voice, bad audio. It's par for the course on this show.
All right. Hey, now, you touched on the Cardinals, and another overtime win. Both their wins come in overtime. That's correct. The first one against the Colts was overtime too, right, Jeff?
That it was. That was a pathetic game too. I mean, those are, you were talking really low scoring games, you know, 13-10, 18-15. This is a team that's got far too many weapons to be held out of the end zone as often as they are, especially against the Colts. 49ers have a pretty decent defense. And I don't want to take anything away from either defense on Sunday because they did have a lot to do with it, but the offense has just looked awful.
How are the Cardinals coping with the loss of David Johnson?
They're not. They're having a hard time running the football, and it's setting Carson Palmer and his crew up for disaster. The offensive line could do a lot better job, but not having DJ out there. I mean, that guy was an MVP candidate, and you take him away in week one, and it just kind of erases a lot of the optimism for the season of the Arizona Cardinals.
What do you expect to happen in Philadelphia this Sunday with Arizona?
I expect them to lose. Unless they're playing a subpar team, I don't have high expectations for them. The Eagles are very close to being an undefeated team. I think that NFC East is actually a pretty good division. And conversely, the NFC West that the Arizona Cardinals play in with the Seahawks, the Rams, and the 49ers is just not up to snuff. And we've seen that before. We've seen 7-9 division champions come out of the NFC West, and we might see it again this year.
Well, except for the Giants, they're not too good.
Oh, the Giants aren't good, but I mean, would you say the AFC West is bad because the Chargers are winless? I think the Chargers are probably the best winless team. I'm not saying that they'll necessarily win against the Giants. I think the Giants are a mess, and they need to make a change at the top because the juxtaposition between Ben McAdoo and Tom Coughlin is just so severe. These players don't show up for this guy, and it's becoming a pattern rather than an outlier.
You know, the Chargers, I guess what they're supposed to do is make it close and lose because they do it all the time. They're always like 2 points away from a win and somehow don't get it. Jeff Rich with us from the Sports Byline USA Network. All right, Jeff, you're from Cleveland. The Browns are now 0-4. And now what do you do?
Well, do we have to talk about the Browns first of all? But, all kidding aside, this is, quite frankly, part of the process. I myself do get very frustrated as a fan, but looking at this from a bird's eye view, the plan is not to make the playoffs in 2017. It's probably not to make the playoffs in 2018, but it's to stockpile assets. It's to acknowledge what a crapshoot the draft is and try to stockpile those draft picks and hope, you know, if you draft five at a position, hopefully two of them hit. I think that it looks more and more hopeless week to week. DeShone Kizer, the rookie, the second round pick out of Notre Dame, playing quarterback for Hugh Jackson almost by default. You know, ideally you don't want to have a rookie on the field right away. I know that it has proven successful at times, and they're going to have that in Chicago with Trubisky making his debut on Monday Night Football. But sometimes these rookies, there's just such a learning curve, and if you get pummeled so often, so right away, like every Browns quarterback over the last 18 years has been, I don't think you give your guy a chance. I don't think that there's a lot of talent on that team, and I don't think that what they have is developing very well. So it's a very bleak outlook for that team. With the, you know, and somehow they're favored against the Jets. I don't really get that, even though they're at home.
Yeah, but you know, Jeff, okay. Your Cleveland Browns, they're 2-29 in their last 31 games, and according to CBSSports.com, that's like the worst stretch in NFL history.
I don't doubt that. I mean, you know, 3-13 was, you had to go all the way back to 2000. You know, they came back in 99, they won two games, they won three games in 99, and then they went on a pretty good run where they'd win four or five a year. I mean, that's kind of the ceiling for these Browns. They finished 7-9 in 24 as recently as 2014, but Mike Pettine's second season in Cleveland didn't go well. You know, they had a Christmas Eve miracle against the Chargers with a missed field goal to even salvage a single game a year ago. So, you know, if they win two games this season, and they might not win any, but if they win two games this season, that's a step in the right direction, as pathetic as that sounds.
What do you think about the Seattle-Los Angeles Ram game coming up in Los Angeles? That's a pretty interesting game now. The Rams have been surprisingly good.
Would you believe the Rams were also 3-1 a year ago? I know you don't have Jeff Fisher to run the thing into the ground this year in L.A., and maybe Sean McVay is that fresh breath that they were seeking, you know, and maybe Jared Goff needed a year to develop. But, you know, after they started 3-1 last year, they went 1-11 down the stretch. And that's why, you know, and that's why the Rams are in a position to start over. I think it's time for Seattle to take this division by the horns and be the team that they're fully capable of being on both sides of the football.
Yeah, but maybe some of the Rams' issues was all that uncertainty back in L.A., and they've also got a great runner in Gurley. He's amazing.
Okay, I love Todd Gurley. I love the takeover of the running backs. I think that we're going to start to see these running backs go in the first round again. You know, I mean, we saw it with Ezekiel Elliott last year. Dalvin Cook doesn't go in the first round, and I think that he's proven to be very effective. Leonard Fournette, you know, I mean, these guys are, you know, these rookie running backs are taking over, and, you know, maybe we need to change that shelf life of the running back from 30 to maybe 26, 27 years old. But Todd Gurley is what makes that offense click. I think that we see the same thing with the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, everybody's got their eyes on Kareem Hunt because of what he's done through 3 weeks of the season. He quietly runs for 102 yards against the Washington Redskins on Monday Night Football, and it sets up Alex Smith on the bootleg. It sets up Alex Smith with the keeper, and it sets up all those players on jet sweeps. You know, the DeAnthony Thomases, the Tyreek Hills, to come and kind of play a horizontal running game, because Kareem Hunt is that downhill runner you got to prepare for. You can't take anybody out of the box against him.
Well, they also got one of the best tight ends in football in Kelsey.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and you're just making me, hey, you must know these guys are from Cleveland. You must know that Kelsey's from Cleveland Heights and that Kareem Hunt's from my hometown of Willoughby. And Mitchell Trubisky, your guy there in Chicago, is from the neighboring community that I grew up in of Mentor, Ohio. So a lot of Northeast Ohio being represented each and every Sunday in the National Football League, and that makes me proud.
Okay, Jeff Rich is proud. We're talking about Kansas City, Houston here. Let's hear from Andy Reid commenting on playing in Houston.
Very good football team. With that, we look forward to the challenge of playing the Texans. We know that they're a very good football team and playing great football now. And we've been there, so we know how the crowd is there and that whole deal. So we've got to prepare ourselves and have a good week of practice. And we started off with our walkthrough this morning. We'll just keep building on that.
We also have Jacksonville at Pittsburgh. Here's Mike Tomlin on Jacksonville.
As I watched their tape, man, there's a lot to be concerned about. I think we should start with their defense. Really impressive, not only on paper, but on video. It's easy to talk about the acquisition of these people on paper and what that means. They've got quality guys at the defensive end position. Yannick, Calais, Dante, whether drafted or free agency in Calais's case, man, they got dynamic guys at the end position. Calais is one of those elephant ends that plays on the tight end side in first and second down. He disrupts your tight end side run game. They move him inside, and they bring Dante in passing situations. He's a former top five pick or whatever. Their end play is exceptional. These guys have provided a lot of splash for them. I think, you know, those three men that I just mentioned together have, I don't know, 14, 15 sacks, sack fumbles. They're providing a wave of negativity that the rest of their defense rides, man. Can't say enough about those guys. I think it starts there for us.
I love Mike Tomlin. He gives great press conference.
Well, he's an honest guy, straight shooter. And then we have the Carolina Panthers, and this has turned out looking to be a pretty good matchup this week. You have Carolina and Detroit in Detroit, and here we hear Ron Rivera comment on Cam Newton.
It's part of just the understanding of what we talked about in the offseason. That was, you know, some of the things that we had to change, some things we had to get better at. And one of the things that we went out and did consciously was we brought in, you know, a young man in Christian that has that ability to, you know, make plays underneath. And it's created a little bit more awareness for Cam in terms of throwing the ball underneath, taking what they're giving. And I think that's something he's starting to understand and, you know, and just move on from in terms of, you know, not always trying to make the big throw downfield as opposed to taking what they give us in front of us and just grind it out, you know. It's interesting because I go back and look at it, and in every game, I believe we've had a drive that's been over 6 minutes, and in three of our games, we've had drives that have been over 8 minutes. And I think that's part of it is that we keep the drive active by taking those 5 and 6 yard passes at a time.
Now, Jeff, this whole Cam Newton controversy where he said it's funny to hear a female talk about running physical routes, are we making too much of it, or should we be paying more attention to this kind of attitude?
You know, there's this whole thing about, you know, women in the media, and, you know, if you pay attention, you know, at least on social media, I don't know if the grand scheme, everything is like this, but, you know, women expect to be, you know, I think that liberals and I think that some women expect themselves to be Teflon from the criticism because they belong all of a sudden. You know, these players, they next question, they no comment reporters, and they'll be condescending towards male reporters that they don't care for. I mean, that's part of the game as far as I'm concerned. I think that this Jordan Rodriguez, I believe her name is, she's an ASU grad. And I think that she made the story about herself a little bit. You know, Newton moves on to answer the question. I thought that he was honestly candid in his reaction. And then, you know, he did not answer the question about Devin Funchess running physical routes. He does give her an answer so that she could write her story. I think it's one of those things that, you know, it's not on the level, but I don't think that we should be reacting the way that we are. And the and Dannon dropped Cam Newton as a spokesperson over this whole thing. So, I mean, the reaction is there. I think it's a slight overreaction, but who am I really to judge?
Yeah, but I mean, on the other hand, you know, why should he be taken aback because a female asks a pretty insightful question? You know, if I saw the clip right, you know, he was sort of saying, like, questioning basically if she understood because she wouldn't have played the game. Well, I heard other commentators say, well, 90% of all the reporters have never played the game. I've certainly stopped playing football in grammar school, but I can understand the basics of football. I think that it goes to the bigger issue of, do women have to work twice as hard to prove themselves in the locker room, but and or don't they deserve the same respect as their male counterparts? You know, we've had, you know, Dion Miller has been a frequent guest on the show. Cheryl Ray has been on our program. They know their stuff. I've been in the trenches with them, so to speak. Their questions are just as insightful as any of their male counterparts, and, you know, no player should take exception to that.
At no point in time am I criticizing the question or even her asking it. I just think that, you know, do we expect these athletes to be robots? I mean, really, if you just want to get canned answers, why don't we just email the questions to the PR department and have the PR department email back the answers? And that's how we're going to cover sports these days. There's got to be honesty, and there's got to be taking on answers or comments that maybe we don't want to hear all the time. But I, you know, my whole thing with it, Steve, is that he didn't insult her. I don't think that he went out of his way to insult her. He was in a way complimenting the question from her, that it wasn't a fluff question. And not that females are expected to ask these fluff questions, but I think that it was such an insightful question that when she started speaking, you know, he expected one thing. And on the other end, he got that question about route running, which I think just surprised him. And I think that he expressed the element of surprise there. He's been unapologetic, and at the end of the day, I don't think that he has anything to apologize for. I don't think that he should say it. You know, I don't think that he should question or point it out, but, you know, are we really that sensitive in society that we're putting this on him? And, you know, just to piggyback on this to kind of go a little more macro is, you know, I think that Jessica Mendoza is fantastic on ESPN's call of baseball games, and I don't care for Beth Mowen's calling play-by-play on college football, and now is, the eighth-tiered CBS team with Jay Feely on the caller. I think that I should be, I should be able to criticize Beth if I don't think that she's up to snuff. You know, it's not because she's a woman. It's just because it's just not my flavor. Whereas Mendoza definitely is. So I think that if women want to be on a level playing field, they have to be able to take it back on the level playing field as well.
But why do you say that? It goes right to the bias that you're addressing. See, Cam Newton, I mean, if it was a good, insightful question, instead of being surprised that a woman asked it or whatever, so he should have just said, good question, maybe rolled his eyes slightly, and then gone ahead and answered it. But it just ends up snowballing into this bigger thing.
If he'd have rolled his eyes, there would have been trouble.
There'd have been trouble if he'd have rolled his eyes. There'd have been trouble if he said, "I'm surprised you asked that question." And, you know, I think that Cam was trying to be funny, and it just didn't land. Yeah. You know, I think that it comes down to that. I don't think that he was insulting. You know, I mean, he did say that it's funny that a female would ask a question about running routes. I can't pick that apart and dissect it to where we're going back to the 1940s male dominated culture. These women are in this room doing this job with these men, and they're going to get the same type of criticism that the men get for whatever reason. And in this case, it is because she's female and he was surprised by it. But again, I think that it was more to speak to the praise of the insight of the technical question that she asked rather than just, you know, putting her down or say, you know, he didn't tell her to go back to the kitchen or anything like that. He just noted it was a candid reaction. It was natural. It was genuine. If you want robots that you can email your questions and then the PR department can email back. You know, if you want to talk to these guys and get honest answers, you're going to get honest answers. And sometimes it's not going to be verbatim what you want to hear.
Oh, you're not always going to get honest answers. I've been in there. A lot of times you just get the usual BS about, just right out of Bull Durham.
Cliches.
Oh, total cliches.
All right, Jeff Rich with us. SportsByline.com is where you hear him Sunday mornings, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Sunday Eastern Time, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Pacific Time at SportsByline.com. Let's talk a bit about college football here, Jeff. The Wisconsin Badgers now undefeated at this point. And do you see them really coming on and being one of the top, you know, they're already in the top 10, but one of the top teams in college football?
One of the top, absolutely. I think so. I think that there's a lot of talent in the Big Ten. I mean, we've already seen Ohio State slip. You've got Penn State, you've got Michigan, you've got Wisconsin, all undefeated, and eventually the best teams are going to play each other. You can't just skate into the college football playoff, nor can you really skate into the Big Ten championship. So I think that Wisconsin's got its flaws, but I think that they have to be looked at among the top teams, especially when you look around. I mean, who's there in the ACC besides Clemson? Who's there in the SEC besides Alabama? Who's there in the Pac-12 besides Washington? And who's there for, you know, from the mid-major group period, maybe San Diego State, but I would definitely think that any undefeated team in a Power 5 conference, going into the first weekend in October is going to be relevant, and you have to respect them as such. You know, we're almost halfway through the season here, so I know that everybody's schedule is backloaded, but I do have a lot of respect for Wisconsin. I don't know that they're going to be there at the end of the day, but in the present tense, I think we have to count them as relevant.
In the ACC, how about Miami? How about Virginia Tech? You know, possibly NC State. There's a few teams in the ACC. It's not bad. Florida State.
I like NC State a lot. I think that NC State has figured out how to do it with less. And I think that that's a testament to Dave Doran. And you know, going back to Wisconsin, Paul Christ and Dave Doran were the coordinators for Brett Bielema when everything was hunky dory during Wisconsin's best era of best era of their football program, and you see what they're doing elsewhere. You know, Paul Christ did okay at Pitt, and then he ends up back at Wisconsin as the head coach, and I think that that's an upgrade from Gary Anderson, who decided that he liked Corvallis better than Madison.
It was an upgrade from Brett Bielema, who's where did he go? He went to Arkansas, right?
Arkansas.
And miraculously, he's still there. I don't get that. But.
And don't forget the beloved Big Ten around here. Big game, Ryan Field in Evanston. Penn State's coming to town to take on Northwestern. They've been a bit of an enigma this season. I would have thought they would have done a lot better, yet they're just 2-2 this, so far this season.
Well, Penn State's really a force to be reckoned with, and you know, give credit to Northwestern for hanging with Wisconsin for as long as they did. I know the story was that Wisconsin wasn't playing their best game until the second half, much like they, you know, they did against Utah State. But as far as Penn State coming in, I mean, this could be a trap game. You know, we look ahead to Penn State Michigan, we look ahead to Penn State Ohio State, but Northwestern's you know, up there at Evanston, they always have a chance to pull off the shocker. They've done it to Ohio State once or twice. They almost did it a third time. If you watch Scott Van Pelt's Bad Beats, it's part of that segment where Northwestern tries to win the game at the end. But you know, I think that it's one of the more interesting games in the Big Ten, probably the biggest game on the Big Ten slate this weekend.
Well, I tell you what, there might be one that might be bigger. How about Michigan State going to the Big House?
Meh. I don't know. That game doesn't really do anything for me. I haven't seen Michigan State really establish themselves as a player in a couple of years now. And it might just be that they're searching for the quarterback or that they need to develop one. But they beat, you know, I'll put it this way. The Michigan State was able to beat Iowa at home, kind of lowered Iowa a notch for me. I thought after Iowa played Penn State so well at home that they were one of those teams that you should have been talking about in the Big Ten. But no, I think that Michigan's going to, you know, just absolutely take care of business. And, you know, I do enjoy seeing that highlight of Jalen Watts-Jackson returning the punt when Michigan, all they had to do was boot the ball out of bounds that year.
Yeah, they'll be showing that one for years to come.
All right, Jeff. Well, thanks very much for coming on. And we will do it again next week. Good insight into the pro and college football discussion. Appreciate it, Jeff. Have a good one.
I'm glad you think so. You guys take it easy.
All right. And now Steve is joined by SRN broadcasting contributor Mike Perlow on fantasy football.
Once again, I'm joined by Mike Perlow as we do our weekly fantasy sports section. And by the way, our audience should know that we do all of our playing exclusively on FanDuel. So, Mike, wasn't a good week for us last week. So let's quickly skip by that with just one comment or two.
Yeah, it was not a good week, Steve. No, our one and only not good week thus far, actually. So every once in a while, we'll suck one up. You know what? If you stay on the straight and narrow and you stick to the plan more times than not, it's going to work out. And that's what we're talking about, is constructing a winning team on FanDuel. And by the way, when we look at these teams, you know, we're looking at constructing the team within their Sunday main slate. Just FYI, that does not include the Monday night game, does not include the Thursday night game. So it's just beginning and ending on Sunday.
So let's jump into week five of the NFL. What's your best game of the week?
I really like the look of Green Bay at Dallas. As a matter of fact, when I look at the chalkiest of chalk plays at the quarterback position this week, especially if you're into the cash games on FanDuel, Aaron Rodgers. There's nobody that even holds a candle to Aaron Rodgers this week. He's expensive. He's $9,500, but I think he's well worth it. And you don't want to be off the Aaron Rodgers train this week.
All right.
You're either on or you're off. And I think it's a win or not decision right there.
Okay, give me a second quarterback for people who maybe want to lose a little bit less on the quarterback so they can spend it more on the running backs or wide receivers.
Absolutely. There's a young man that's starting now down in Houston, Texas, and they're going to be hosting his very first primetime game on Sunday Night Football, and that's
Deshaun Watson, formerly at Clemson. Yeah, I saw him play, and I knew he would be something pretty good.
Yeah, I love this kid, Steve. Last week, he threw for 4 touchdown passes, and he ran for a 5th.
All right, let's move to running back. Who looks good there on running backs?
Yeah, so sticking in that same game, I would go with Ezekiel Elliott. I think while the Packers are going to be trying to put as many points as they can on the board, Cowboys going to look to try and grind the clock down, and they're going to do so by running the ball. They're going to utilize that big offensive line, and they're going to ride the Zeke train.
All right. What about Le'Veon Bell? How do you like him?
I like him a lot, actually. Some people might be scared off of Pittsburgh this week. And when you look at it holistically, they're facing Jacksonville. You know, we've been riding Jacksonville, right? Jacksonville defense is tough. They're aggressive. They create turnovers. They score touchdowns. What people don't know is while they're highly ranked overall, the rush defense is actually suspect.
Yeah, I noticed that. But see, wouldn't that make then Leonard Fournette a possibly good pick for this game?
That's going in the opposite direction, yes. But I'm looking specifically at Le'Veon Bell in that situation. I want Le'Veon Bell as my Steeler representative this week. I'm not on Antonio Brown. I'm not on Ben Roethlisberger. I'm on Le'Veon Bell facing off against the Jacksonville defense to try and turn the clock.
Okay, let's move to wide receiver.
We'll go back to Aaron Rodgers, his connection in the end zone. He's got a couple, actually, that I really like. You saw that Davante Adams got hit really hard last week by Trevathan of the Bears, and Trevathan will be sitting a week on the Pines not getting paid. But I really like Jordy Nelson. I really like Randall Cobb. Both those guys as targets for Aaron Rodgers, they're money week in and week out, especially Jordy Nelson seems to – be an end zone magnet, really.
So, yeah, he was one of the top receivers last week. So, yep, absolutely. Ride the Nelson train.
Also at wide receiver, giving a shout-out to DeAndre Hopkins as well as Will Fuller. Will Fuller came back from an injury last week, scored two touchdowns. Hopkins had a touchdown himself and over 100 yards receiving. So both those guys with Watson paired nicely. So you can do the Rodgers with either Nelson or Cobb, or you do the Watson with either Fuller or Hopkins. Got to do that to win some cash.
All right, let's keep moving then. Tight end?
Yeah, tight end. One guy I like week in, week out. He's always questionable, but week in, week out, I expect him to perform. He's been a little shaky as of late, and Russell Wilson needs to find him as a security blanket, and that's Jimmy Graham, especially with Doug Baldwin being a little bit banged up. I look for Jimmy Graham to be latched onto by Russell Wilson. I look for him to see a lot of balls because the Rams are going to be attacking Russell Wilson quickly with that ferocious front seven, right? That's going to leave a quick out for a tight end. Avoid the blitz, big yards. I also like Evan Engram, Giants guy. He's been seeing the number two share of targets from Eli Manning so far this year through four games. He's only behind Odell Beckham on that team in targets, and he's grabbing at least 4 to 5 balls per week.
That's a team that can't win ball games, though.
They can't win ball games, but you know what that means? They're going to be in a position where they're going to be running a quick drill. And who does Eli love to go to in a quick drill? Tight end.
All right. Now, tell me a defense.
I'll throw you the other side of town for New York. I really like the Jets, as a matter of fact, this week. While the Jets stink up the joint on offense, they actually have a more than formidable defense, and they find themselves going into the dog pound in Cleveland this week. DeShone Kizer's been giving the ball away left and right. Their once thought to be ferocious offensive line cannot gel, and they're not running the ball either. They're struggling. I look for the Jets to pound them.
Well, that game is an over-under 39. It's definitely the lowest projected scoring game this week, so that's not a good, not a bad choice. Another game with a low over-under would be Buffalo and Cincinnati. So any thoughts on either of those two defenses?
Yeah, I happen to prefer Buffalo out of those defenses. Andy Dalton's been inconsistent at best. Last week, his first time he showed up all season thus far. And I expect Buffalo to start gelling as a unit and continuing to penetrate the passer.
So you got two road defenses, though. That's interesting.
It is interesting.
All right. Well, we'll see next week how we did. Thanks again, Mike Perlo, our fantasy sports expert. And we'll tell everybody how we did on our FanDuel picks. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, Steve. And Mike Perlo, thanks a lot for that. We will be back with more on the Sports Report John Poulter, our professor of sports from Toronto, will be talking about the Major League Baseball races and the start of hockey coming up on the show.
The changing colors of fall also means falling leaves and overflowing gutters won't be far behind. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner. Stay tuned for a do-it-yourself gutter cleaning solution right after this.
Carrier asks, what does comfort mean to you? Is it a cool breeze on a scorching day or a cozy corner on a cold night? That every room of the house is as inviting as the next and the air is fresh and clean for everyone. At Carrier, comfort means more than just the temperature, and the people who invented modern air conditioning keep inventing new ways to make you comfortable, however you define it. Carrier, turn to the experts. Visit Carrier.com and make yourself comfortable.
No one likes cleaning gutters, especially the part where you scoop them out by hand. What if you could just spray them out with a garden hose without climbing up on the roof? Well, you can. You'll need a couple pieces of PVC pipe, two 90-degree PVC elbows, an end cap, PVC glue, and a threaded adapter to match up with your garden hose. From one piece, cut two pieces about 12 inches in length. Glue them into an elbow to form an L. Now, use the other elbow to attach the L to the full piece of pipe. The threaded hose adapter goes on the other end of this piece. Drill one or two small holes in the cap before you glue it over the remaining open end. Now you can spray out your gutters without setting a foot on a ladder. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner.
You know, sometimes when you compare prices on products, you think to yourself, what difference does it make? The rates are all about the same anyway. But sometimes the rates are very different. Let me give you an example where there's a huge difference in pricing between companies. Vehicle protection plans. Look, if your car is 4 years or older, having a vehicle protection plan is a no-brainer. The trick is not to overpay for it. Here are the facts. The average price of a vehicle protection plan is $2,800, while the price of a TOCO warranty vehicle protection plan for most vehicles is just $1,500. The average down payment on a vehicle protection plan is $299. With TOCO warranty, there's no down payment. The average monthly payment on a vehicle protection plan is more than $160 a month. With TOCO, the average monthly payment is just $49. To get a highly rated vehicle protection plan at a great low rate, call TOCO Warranty at 1-800-987-3157. That's 1-800-987-3157. Terms and conditions apply.
Back on the program, Packer Dave along with Steve Leventhal. Sad news this week, Tom Petty, heart attack at the age of 66. That's pretty young, and he had some great hits. My band in Niagara Falls actually plays a couple of his songs, Running Down a Dream and Mary Jane's Last Dance. And sad story, right, Steve?
Oh, yeah, man. 66, way too young. You know, you see Keith Richards cooking away in the 70s, and you wonder, like, what's his secret?
That's what everybody, that's the bar, I guess, is the Keith Richards bar. But, you know, sad story, but Tom Petty left us with a lot of good music, so a lot to remember him by. Okay, we got the Packers and the Cowboys this week. It's a late game on Fox Sunday afternoon, and let's hear from Jason Garrett, coach of the Cowboys, on the Packers and their quarterback, Aaron Rodgers.
Each week in the NFL, you have to prepare yourself as players and coaches and a football team to play your best, and that's really where our focus is. To your point, obviously the Packers have been one of the best teams in the league over the last decade or so. They're in the playoffs every year, but again, the biggest thing for us to do is prepare the way we prepare and go play our best on Sundays, regardless of who the opponent is. You always want to keep the quarterback in the pocket and affect him as much as you can without letting him to get out in space and get to where he's more comfortable. Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback, in the pocket, out of the pocket, going right, going left. He's a great player, and we all just have to look at the tape and give you plenty of examples of him just playing quarterback at a very high level from every part of the field. Having said that, you need discipline every week with your pass rush. You need to make sure that you understand contain. You need to make sure you understand gaps, all of those things when you're affecting a quarterback, and certainly a quarterback as good as Aaron Rodgers.
Now to talk Major League Baseball playoffs, we go to our professor of sports from Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. He is John Poulter. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave. Hello to you, and hello to you as well, Steve.
Playoffs.
It's the playoffs, and I'll tell you, John, you come down here into Arizona, April usually each year. We catch a Diamondbacks game. The Diamondbacks win a one-game wild card playoff against Colorado. It was more exciting than it should have been from my point of view because they were up 6-0 at one point.
Yeah, it was kind of a funny game, the Wednesday night game with the Diamondbacks and the Colorado Rockies. And in a lot of ways, it was similar to the American League game the night before in that there was a lot of offense and that offense was early. And in each case, all four teams threw out a starting pitcher that was either the ace of the staff or had a very good season. And I think in total, the four of them threw 7 1/3 innings, which is what you would expect to get out of one good pitcher at this time of year. So they did their very best to make it interesting. They got up 6-0. And quite frankly, when the Diamondbacks are up 6-0, you'd expect them to shut it down from there. But they let Colorado back into the game with that inning where they got the four runs. And it seemed like it was a tightrope from then on.
Yeah, it seemed like Zach Greinke just kind of fell off a cliff there. He was doing so well, and then pow, all the runs started coming in.
Yeah, very uncharacteristic of Greinke. He has a record of any time his team gets him three runs or more, I think he's about 98% in terms of winning the game for his team. So very uncharacteristic for Zach Greinke, and perhaps the most important thing is that takes him out of the rotation for the first couple of games of the division series, which start Friday night in Los Angeles.
Okay, what do you think about that series, Diamondbacks and Dodgers? The Dodgers had such a great season.
Dodgers had a great season, kind of a bit of a streaky season. The last 6 weeks were not the type of season that Dodger manager Dave Roberts and general manager and owner would like to see. But as far as I'm concerned, the Dodgers did right the ship at the end of the year. I think we're in for a good series, but I got to give the edge to the Dodgers, A, because they're a little bit rested, having not had to play that wild card game, and B, they have the extra home game in five if it happens to go five games, and the experience, of course.
Well, and John, the game, of course, or the series they're talking about here in Chicago is that not only are the Cubs traveling to Washington to play the Nationals, but the Cubs are the underdogs in this series as defending World Series champs.
Yeah, based on the season's play, Steve, I think they should be the underdogs. What might even it out a little bit is that I looked at the MLB website on Thursday morning to see if the projected starters were up, and Washington has got that famous TBD pitching all of the first four games for them. So clearly there's some issues there with the pitching. I guess it all revolves around how healthy Max Scherzer is. He pulled a hamstring, I guess, in his last start on the weekend. So that might be a little bit troublesome for them. So it may not be a question of the fact that the pitching is weak. It just may be that they want to find out where the best spot to throw Scherzer in there. But I got to go with Washington, all things being equal, and part of that all things being equal would be Bryce Harper being healthy and able to play like Bryce Harper can.
Okay, John Poulter with us from Toronto, our professor of sports. Let's take a look at some of the other series, the Red Sox and Astros. Friday night, you have that, or actually Friday afternoon in Houston. What's your outlook on that series?
Well, I think that's going to be an interesting series, too. A couple of heavyweights that have basically sort of led their division for most of the year. And not only did they lead their divisions for most of the year, they played the last four games of the regular season against each other at Fenway Park, which made it a little bit different in terms of how teams that have already clinched divisions usually finish out their regular season. So at that point, they were sort of vying for home field advantage, although Houston was with Cleveland in terms of the overall for the American League spot. So neither team could really afford to rest their regulars. So I'm looking for that to be a pretty good series. And game one matchup Thursday afternoon is Chris Sale and Justin Verlander. That's got to be a fan's dream in terms of wanting to watch a good pitching matchup.
Okay, John. And then the other series, your thoughts on the Yankees and Indians?
Well, based on what I've seen from the Indians the last 6 or 8 weeks, you got to go with the Indians, although the Yankees did look good in that wild card win the other night. But I just think Cleveland is a stronger and deeper team, certainly in terms of starting pitching. I got to go with Cleveland in that. I'm looking at that probably being done in four games.
Okay, John, let's hear from Joe Girardi on his pitching rotation for the American League Division Series.
We decided to go with Sonny first. You know, if you look at some of the outings he's had against them, the raw numbers he's had against them, he's fared as well as any pitcher that we have. CeCe will go game two, and then we have Tanaka scheduled for game three. So, I mean, we looked at a lot of different things. We could have went a lot of different directions. When it came down to it, it was pretty – it was a long conversation, and, you know, we could have went – you could have went another way, but it's just what we chose to do.
Well, I think Girardi summed it up pretty well. I guess based on what happened in the wild card game on Tuesday night, he really didn't have a lot of options other than to go with Gray, Sabathia, and Tanaka. Clearly, Severino let him down on Tuesday night. I guess they felt that he was ready for prime time based on the season that he'd had and how dominant he had been over the last couple of months of the season. But quite frankly, he looked absolutely horrible in that game against the Twins on Tuesday night. And I thought the Yankees were lucky that they came back in that game because they could have been buried very early. And I know it must have been very tough for Girardi to take Severino out only a third of an inning into the ballgame. But the way that he was pitching and the way that the Twins were picking him up, I think it was the right decision. A tough decision, but the right one. So the question now is, where does Severino fit in terms of the championship, the division series? Probably fits into the number four spot, which would put him up against Josh Tomlin of the Cleveland Indians, because as Girardi has indicated, his 1-2-3 guys are Gray, Sabathia, and Tanaka.
Well, and John, you know, that was a pretty good move, you know, pull the yank him out pretty early, because, you know, you have to play those games, those wild card games, like a game seven. And at the same time, you know, you at least gave yourself a chance to get back in the game, which the Yankees did.
Yeah, it's a funny game, actually, Steve, because to your point, you do have to manage it like game seven, because if you lose, there's no tomorrow. But on the other hand, you can't afford to blow your whole pitching staff out, because if you do happen to win the game, you got to be right back on the field in 2 days. So it's a very different game. You know, there's a whole bunch of pieces to a baseball season. There's spring training, there's the regular season, there's the postseason, there's the World Series, and now we've got this new thing called the wild card. And it's probably managed much differently than most other games, other than the deciding game of any postseason series.
Okay, now we move on to hockey, which is starting up again. And, of course, the Chicago Blackhawks, of interest to many people that listen to this show. And, John, your thoughts on the Blackhawks, and then we got a clip from Joel Quenneville here.
Well, the Blackhawks are in this continued rebuilding because of the pressure against the salary cap. And, of course, they're dealing with the a season-long injury to Marian Hossa because of that skin condition, which certainly doesn't help them in terms of their playing ability, does help them in terms of their cap situation. But, you know, we got the usual guys, Kane and Taves and Keith and Seabrook and goaltender Corey Crawford, and a familiar face coming back to Chicago in Brandon Saad, which I think is a tremendous acquisition back from the Columbus Blue Jackets, although it did cost the Blackhawks Panarin, who has had two great seasons. But I still think Brandon Saad is one of the best two-way players in the game, and certainly will fit in very nicely on that left wing with Captain Jonathan Taves, and that's something that's been missing for the last couple of years with Saad being in Columbus.
All right, here Quenneville comments on rotating eight defensemen.
We'd like to get everybody involved as early as possible. Sometimes you don't want to change your winning lineup. Sometimes you don't want to keep a guy out of the lineup for too long. Every guy's, whether it's a young guy or an old guy, everybody wants to play. Everybody wants, not just the guys that are out of the lineup, the guys that are playing want to play more and feel that they'll be better with more ice time as well. So we're going to be a lot of watching the pairs, how compatible they are with one another, how they're progressing as a tandem. And, you know, as you get making decisions for who's going to play, that just, you know, I think that's something you can't forecast and just let it evolve.
Your thoughts on that, John?
Well, the question, of course, is he doing it because he's spoiled for choice, or is he doing it out of absolute necessity? And I think it's probably a little bit more of the latter because, quite frankly, once you get past Keith and Seabrook, that defense is pretty spotty. The 3-4 guys are probably going to be Forsling and Frentz, and then after that, it's a little bit of a crapshoot. I guess Connor Murphy fits into that equation as well, but I think his rotating eight defensemen is somewhat a sign of desperation, but it's going to help Keith and Seabrook with some rest if that's what they need to have. I mean, it's a little scary when you sit back and think that for all those years, the team had four good defensemen, and in their second pairing in Chalmerson and Oduya, they had a good shutdown pair that was as good as most first string pairs throughout the league, and in those days Keith and Seabrook were playing together. So there's a tremendous amount of pressure on Keith and Seabrook. If either one of those guys hurt, if there's an injury to either one of those two, I think the Hawks have got some real problems back there. But these guys have to get some experience, and maybe this is the best way to break them in slowly but surely.
So, John, who else do you like in the Western Conference this season?
Well, you've got the familiars, but I think Minnesota is probably the team that would concern me the most. Los Angeles, Anaheim, San Jose, all the usuals. St. Louis has looked good. Dallas has improved itself tremendously in the offseason, but you got to go with the usual favorites, I think, Steve.
Okay, John. And then what about your Toronto Maple Leafs? They're a big hit in Toronto. That's probably the biggest team in all of Canada as far as, in Ontario, as far as support and fan base. Well, you got the Senators too. But you're in Toronto. Are you excited about this year for the Maple Leafs?
Yeah, it's the best preseason we've seen in quite some time. And coming off the promise of last year, it looks very good. And to your parallel, Dave, I think it's probably fair to say that the Leafs are the team in terms of sport in this town, the same way that the Yankees and the Lakers are in their respective cities, and the Cowboys are in Dallas in the U.S. But they certainly looked very good on Wednesday night in their opening game in Winnipeg. They were outplayed in the first period, but the next thing you knew, they were up 6-0, and they finally ended up winning 7-2. So clearly a much better team than we've seen in recent years. I don't think they're Stanley Cup contenders by any stretch of the imagination, but most certainly a much improved team over what we saw 2 or 3 years ago.
Hey, and Dave, you know we got a new team in the league. Las Vegas has a new expansion franchise.
I know. That's great for that town. And plus, they got a football team, too. So all's good in Vegas. Well, John, thanks very much for coming on the show. We will do it again next week. Thanks for all the great info that you bring to the show.
My pleasure as always, guys. Take care, and we'll look forward to chatting next week.
All right. We will talk to you then. And we want to thank you for listening to this edition of the Sports Report. Remember, you can get us each week. New shows posted towards the end of the week at internetfm.com. and kwwradio.com. So for Steve Leventhal, for our professor of sports, John Poulter, for Jeff Rich, I'm Packer Dave saying thanks a lot for listening. Take care. Have a good week. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
That's right, tough guy.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Get some beer, scumbag!
Goodbye.
Tell you what, Dipstick, you can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt. Pucker up, Buttercup.
Yeah, I hear you, Fruitcake.
Oh, it's hopeless. I ought to club them and eat their bones.
Goodbye.
Now, you ladies, carry on.
Excellent.
See you later, pal. I'm going home.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm glad that's over. Now it's over.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Let's get out of here.